Okay, dear Venerable, I was getting sloth and torpor after my mind had stopped wandering. Then I felt a sudden strong force overpowering me, and I became fully awake and enveloped in that forceful vacuum. What was that? I suppose it's just a meditation experience. A vacuum. I don't know what you're talking about, but could be a Dyson vacuum cleaner. getting sloth and torpor, and after my mind stopped wandering. I suppose you went from a sloth and torpor, and then the mind brightened up quite quickly. So you transitioned from a slothful state into a very mindful state. And then I suppose that's the reason why afterwards you felt that you were going through a forceful vacuum. But the main thing that you should be aware of when you're experiencing something like this is the amount of peace and inner happiness that you're feeling. So if you're feeling peaceful and at ease and relaxed, then this experience that you were experiencing is a good experience. And something like, and if you just continue further, you just go deeper. Can you hear properly? Yeah? Okay, for each of the monks and nuns, what gems of Dharma would you share with a small group of teenagers to help them lead a more happy, peaceful, and wholesome life? Listen to your parents, because they are wise and know how to teach you. You know, teenagers, I wouldn't know what to say to teenagers, but I suppose you can teach them Dhamma, teach them how to be wholesome people. But it's very difficult to teach teenagers, because they basically want to do what they want to do. They are growing up in a society where they are taught to be their own selves. So at this stage in their lives, I think it's very difficult for parents to teach a teenager Dhamma. As you know for yourselves, when you were younger, probably your parents tried to teach you a little bit of Dhamma, but because you were a teenager and you knew what you wanted in life, did you listen to your parents? Probably not. So I would say when a teenager is ready, then they would come and see a monk, or come to the Buddha Society or something like that. And they would be ready to listen to Dhamma, but when they're not ready, they're not going to listen, so they won't be learning anything.
Well, a good question. Did you ever listen to what your parents told you in this age? And I remember when I was a teenager, I have done so many bad things. You don't want to know. Really, you don't want to know. So remember how you will be conditioned. You will be only conditioned by what you see in the others. You can tell them you should don't drink. You should don't smoke. You should don't listen so long now to me. If you know nobody looks TV today, everybody is looking in the internet. Okay, at 10 latest, internet finish, and then you go to school. And yourself smoking in the evening, one glass of wine, maybe two. Maybe three. Sometimes you teach your children how to be. You should not be this, you should not be this. You explain. You are interested to explain. I told you how you should be? No, it's not interesting how you should be. The only way to teach your children, only one way. Take a look at yourself, how you behave. And if you behave well, that's the way you condition your children. You condition all the world. How you behave for yourself. So that's why we all sit here. Not everywhere else, we sit here. To try to be a better human being. To try to be happy, to find a way to happiness. And if your children see that you are happy, really happy, that's the way of seeing, okay, my parents are happy. They must do something right. But if they see you are very unhappy, and you are angry about them, you're explaining, no, don't do this, close the lights, shut the doors. Oh, it was my father, it was not me, sorry. Really, it was not me. But do you listen? No. You listen only to what you show your children. So show you that you're happy. Never explain your children how they should be. Never. If you explain them how you should be, you set them so much under pressure. They are like they are. You never will change them into this way. You make it worse, much worse, if you explain them how they should be and how they are not. Suppose to support them everywhere you can. It doesn't matter. There was one guy who was asking these days his parents disagree that he's gay. It's the worst thing that you ever can do to your children. If you explain to them, you are wrong. It doesn't matter if you are fat, if you are slim, if you are gay, if you are stupid in school, or whatever you are. It doesn't matter. Support your children like they are. Love them for what they are. That's the best teaching you can give them. No more. And never explain them how they should be. That's my experience for my life.
But teenagers, they're still learning. So in a way that you just have to allow them to make mistakes sometimes. And so one of the things important, I guess, is I would say if they can learn how to understand cause and effect. So I think many teenagers make a lot of mistakes and they're still doing okay when they're adults, so it's not so bad. But it's just kind of, it's the time that they need to experience life and learn for themselves. So if they smoke, then let them understand the consequences of smoking. So maybe if they like running and then they start smoking. Actually, that's what happened to me. I like biking, and I started smoking. And then the next day, when I biked, I noticed my lung, that there was a difference there. So you just kind of skillfully let them understand their own, the effects of their own actions, and they'll learn. If it's painful, they notice it, they'll learn. And so one other thing I remember a friend told me, she was already kind of a middle-aged woman, and she has a little girl at that time, probably around 10 or something. And she took her to Palm Village in France to do a retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh. So they have they learned this kind of mindfulness bell thing. So you just have to read it now and stuff. But it's just like the learning to be mindful, and if they're mindful and see the cause and effect, that's what they should learn around that age.
I've never spoken before in front of a lot of people. So please bear with me if I'm not too clear. But regarding this particular question, maybe I can speak from my experience, because I had 4 sons, and of course, as they grow up, and when they become teenagers, they are a bit rebellious. They have a mind of their own. They want to do as they like, you know. And sometimes you get overly concerned about them. And you make the mistake when you are overly concerned. Actually, they are naturally growing up, just the natural way of trying to having a mind of their own and expressing it. So I used to make mistakes also, like because I have been going to the monastery, I've been listening to Dhamma talk, so I thought that must be the best thing for them. So I tell them, would you like to go? Tonight we are going to Dhamma Loka, you know. And one of my sons, he's a bit spiritually inclined, so he does come with myself and my husband at that time when he was still alive. So, but then there are some that they are not spiritually inclined. So if they make some mistake and you're so concerned about them, the more you try to push them to go to them to listen to Dhamma talk, the more rebellious they become. and they say, no. So can't do much about that. So after going through some worries and whatnot, decided, okay, never mind. I just show by example. So I continue to do what I enjoy doing, and what I feel confident to do. I still go to the monastery, offer dana, go and listen to Dhamma talks on Friday nights, attend meditation retreats. So I just continue like that, and then finally, I even got so deep that I wanted to become a nun. At that time, it was the opportune time, I guess, because my husband passed away. And a few years later, my mom passed away at the age of 100. So so my father also died a long time ago, and my in-laws have already gone. So I feel very free, because the children are all grown up, and they are working and earning, you know, for their own selves. So and also that son who is a bit spiritually inclined is always pushing me to go to the monastery. Mom, you should go to the monastery. You are so old now. You better go there. go and stay there a few days, you know. So at that time, his father was still alive. So actually, I was very excited about that. Then I go and tell his father, you know, our son asked me to go and stay in the monastery every month, 1 week. So my husband never stopped me from doing anything I like to do. But I know that he wasn't very happy. But since my son encouraged me, so okay, I went. And the more I went, the more inclined I was towards the monastery, until finally he died, my mother died, and my children are all independent. So I decided to become a nun, stay in the monastery. And they were very happy with that. They said, Mom, you do what you want to do. Except for one of my sons said, now Dad has died already. If you go, we don't have anyone. So, but it won't go in because I was so. I come to a stage where I really would like to do that. It just won't go into my mind. But for him, especially, he's got a family of his own with two children and a wife and two children. So actually, he should be the least worried. But anyway, with their blessings, finally, all of them gave their blessings. So I started staying in Damansara. But I was surprised to see that, oh, my children, one by one, they come to offer dana. The one that didn't want to go with me to the monastery comes to the monastery every week to offer dana now. And goes to Dhammaloka to listen to Dhamma talks. When I was trying to get him to go, he is not interested. But now he goes every week. And even the residents in Damansara, they say, ah, yeah, he comes again. Every week he comes. So then one of my son who was in Singapore also decided to come back and stop working for a while. So I said, good. Go and listen to Dhamma talks, go to the monastery. And they go quite freely now. And that one also became the secretary of the Buddhist Society. And my eldest son is staying with his family in Sydney. He also decided that he wanted to come back here. And I'm very happy to hear that because I said, oh, very good. If you come back here, there's the monasteries here. His wife had a good laugh because she's not thinking of that. She's not thinking of that. She just agreed to come because my son wanted to come. So it's very good. So three of my sons are here. The other one will be coming later on. So all of them will be here. And there's the opportunity for them to do something for themselves. Spiritually, so it turned out to be good. I the more I push, the worse it is. So show by example is the best. Okay, thank you.
Venerable, I experienced once before, I thought I was having insomnia, but it don't look like. Because I woke up fresh, not tired. Two, I was aware of movement. Three, my mind is still and awake, but don't like sleeping. At times can hear partner snore. Am I in a state of meditation? Six, can we meditate in a lying down position? 7, I often lie down, rest my eyes when tired. Metta. That's like 7 questions in one page. What is going on here? Okay, I woke up fresh and not tired. That's very good. I was aware of movement. Yes, you're being mindful, so that's a good thing too. My mind is still, so yeah, that's also another good thing. That means you've been practicing meditation correctly. At times, I can hear my partner snore. You didn't have to tell me that. Am I in the state of meditation? I don't know if you are or are not. Are you becoming peaceful? Are you relaxed? If you are, you are probably are in a state of meditation. But if your mind is overcome by the 5 hindrances, you are not. Can we meditate in a position lying down? I think Ajahn Brahm has answered that question. He said that if you want to lie down, then lie down in a place which is not your bed. Because he said that once you lie down on your bed, you are more likely to go to sleep than to stay awake and continue meditating. So what you can do is what he said was to lie down on the floor or something like that. Or what I do is sometimes I get the blanket and I scrunch it up and feel like a big ball. Throw it on the head and then I just incline on that. So my body is at a 45 degree angle. And that's, you know, that's very comfortable. I feel really peaceful when I do that. So maybe you should try it. Okay, yeah, you rest your eyes when you're tired. Yes, that is a good thing. You can do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Okay. For all four, what do you find difficult as a nun/monk? Thank you. What do I find difficult? Well, it gets easier once you live the monastic life for quite some time. I've been a monk for about 7 years now. So if you ask me the question, do I have so many difficulties in my monastic life? The answer is not really. I don't really have too many difficulties in monastic life. But when I was younger, I had difficulties. You have the difficulty of having a mind which was not happy staying in a monastery because of reasons like the meditation not going well, or you may have problems with other members of the community. But over the years, what you learn is you learn how to live within the community. So the people that you had problems in the past, the older you get, the wiser you become. So you learn that people are just going to be people, so you just got to let them be. Because you can imagine living in a monastery where we're just surrounded by just guys, basically. You know, full of egos and testosterone and all that kind of stuff. So, and sometimes you might just get you just rub shoulders with one another. And you have different views and opinions and different ways of doing things, and some personalities are quite strong. So I think as a person living in a monastery, then you may get into these situations where you have problems with other people in the community. So what do you do? If you wanna develop a spiritual life living in a monastery, you have to learn how to live with other people. So the best way to do it is you just close one eye. And if you don't really like what they're doing, close both eyes. And you just don't see what they do, and you don't care really. You just allow them to do what they want. And if they're going to practice, they're going to practice. I was sitting with Ajahn Brahm this morning, and we were just talking about practice and how people practice. And he would say to me, and he would say this over and over again, this is one of the reasons why Ajahn Brahm is so relaxed when he's relaxed with the monks. He doesn't control the monks. He doesn't tell them what to do. He just allows them to be. And he says the reason why he allows them to be is if they want to practice, then they are going to practice. And if monks, if they want to mess around, then they're going to mess around. So that's the reason why he is not a dictator, and that's the reason why he doesn't point his finger to tell monks to do what they got to do. And you can imagine if he did that, then the monks in the monastery will be very upset, because no one likes to be told. They like to do their own thing. So you know, I respect Ajahn Brahm in that way. His ability to just allow things to be. and to let go and allow monks to grow at their own pace. So with difficulties, yeah, you know, you don't have a, you know, I do have my difficulties. You know, the mind isn't so peaceful at times. I'm not enlightened. It's difficult being not being enlightened. You know, you know, stuff like that. But it's not such a big deal after all. You learn how to deal with your defilements and learn how to live a happy monastic life.
Good question. Too good. I turn it around. What I find difficult in ordinary life, what I find difficult in my lay life, that's the reason why I became a monk and why I was condemned in the monastery. Ravan Tuti told us the problems, maybe they occur in the monastery. And when I remember my life in my office, I'd have the same problems. But maybe much stronger. And in day life, okay, you have your escape strategies. You can go. You can watch TV, drink alcohol, go to parties, everything you can do to escape from suffering in life. Maybe it's not so easy in a monastery to escape. Maybe it's more difficult to face your problems. You cannot run away. You can go in the forest. Okay, if you have really a problem and you are angry about anybody, go in the forest, take a look for a tree, and shout this tree. All you want, shout this tree or this stone. You can do it. But you cannot escape. You have to face your problems, and you can find a solution for your problems. And you will see that the problems are only with you, and it doesn't matter where you go. And I think in my lay life, then I change the places very often. And every time when I change the place, the problems never changed. They were all the time with me. Every time, every place I were, I'd have the same problems. You will ever have people you like, people you don't like. Okay. Yes, deal with it. So, and in lay life, for me, it was much more difficult. Much, much more difficult to keep my precepts, the 5 precepts. I have the greatest respect for all of you. How you can deal with it in lay life. For me, it was impossible. So my only security for myself is clothes. And the monastery is my security line, really. So it's much more difficult for me to stay in lay life than in monastic life. It's much more easier.
The question is
the opposite for me. How can you stay in lay life?
Let's see. I guess lay life, a lot of the time, it seems that you have more of a choice. So you choose the person that you live with. You can't choose your parents, but you can't choose your children either. But you choose your home and decoration and things like that. It does have, you know, if you want to control, to some extent you can. Monastic life, you end up living with like random Joe Blows from all over the world, and all sorts of age, personality, habits, ideas, concepts, and some you like, some you intensely dislike. I don't want to say hate, because that would be, you know, bad. So it's, and like what the monk just said, that, you know, you can't really once you kind of devoted to this life, it's not as easy to just kind of walk away or run away. Probably easier for the monks, because they have actually more monasteries to go to if you really want to run away. But for nuns in the Theravada scene, it's less choices, more difficult, and politics and all this stuff. So then what you end up doing is this: you just need to cultivate tolerance, contentment, and learn that that's part of life. And that's not easy. So that's I'm still learning.
Monastic life is not easy. I find it very difficult when I first came in. Not because the work is difficult or the training is difficult. It's just that there are things that you can do 100 ways. And coming to my age, I've already been it. Doing a lot of things like for the household and whatnot. I know what to do. It's just that sometimes you have to do it in a certain way. And that certain way is insisted on you, and that's when it becomes a bit difficult. So your mind sometimes feels very hard inside. That's when you are resisting. But also, when I first came into the monastery, people tell me it's like a bag of potatoes, and then you handle the potatoes, hold them up, put them down, handle them. They rub against each other, and by the time you open them up, no more skin on the potatoes. So I don't say that I do not get angry at times, because different people got different temperament. But whenever I feel annoyed, usually I cry over it. I mean, there was one day when I was sitting, it was Dana time. Fortunately, only one person came to offer Dana. And I just couldn't stop my tears from rolling down the whole time. But then I've been listening. We have been listening to Ajahn Brahm's talk. Every Wednesday we listen to his monastic talks. And he also talks about the early days when he became a monk, and it was also difficult. And I listened very well to how he handled those situations. So I try to do the same. And I usually feel that I'm not annoyed with the person, but it's just anger comes up, and it's very hard to just remove it, you know. So I will take incense candles, and I will light them up and burn them. And then I will, in front of the Buddha, I will tell the Buddha all my problems. And if the Buddha can see me, I'll be crying there. But then after that, I feel much better. And sometimes the night before, I've been thinking, tomorrow if I go into the building, I won't look at that person. But anyhow, the next day when I go into to the cottage, then when I hear the person is not feeling well, I just go there and ask, How are you feeling? Are you feeling better? I don't know why, it's just automatic. I just do the opposite of what I was planning to do the night before. So anyway, it gets easier over time, because then just do what you are told. Just whatever people like you to do, just do it this way. Whatever people say, don't do that way. Okay, don't do that way. It doesn't matter. Otherwise, you'll be building up this hardness in the mind, you know. So just let go. The life in the monastery, the best thing is to let go. That's why Ajahn Brahm always encouraged letting go. And even in lay life also, if we can try to let go as many times as we can, then life will be easier, everyone. And now for me, it's very much easier since the time I came into the monastery. And I'm very happy there. And even those people who I had a hard time with, we are now very good friends, because I never show that I'm angry. I just feel it inside. But when I see that person, I don't try to retaliate. So slowly, slowly it wears off, and slowly, slowly things get better. It definitely will get better if you let go.
To all monks and nuns, do you have any idea of how many people who come to ordain have already reached the jhanas? With thanks. It's a secret. I only know of one person, Ajahn Brahm. And I think I'm doing another person as well. He's a good friend of mine. But the way that we've been taught by Ajahn Brahm is not to talk about our meditation practice, because of reasons of jealousy, people become envious, and then people start to compare their meditation practice. So that's the reason why Ajahn Brahm discourages the monks to talk about their meditation practice with each other. So really, we don't really know what is going on, if you have good meditation or you've had bad meditation. But to my knowledge, I only know one monk, I think. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Why do you want to know? Does it really help you? What do you say? You can be only jealous. I don't know in this monastery anybody who expect Ajahn Brahm. But I don't know if he has jhanas, but I believe he has. But I don't know, but I'm not interested in if everybody has jhanas, if Narayana Tuti has jhanas, if you have jhanas. I'm not interested in this, I'm interested to be happy for my own. If I'm happy, so everything is okay. And if you have jhanas, good for you.
Well, if you want to know, then you have to come to Thammasara Monastery, and I'll help you to shave. Then maybe you'll know.
This sort of thing is not made known to each other, just that you know some people are very good in their meditation, but how far they go you wouldn't know. So well? You know, you wouldn't know then. You know, people don't tell you also usually.
We all have jhanas.
Has anybody in this meditation retreat has attained jhana? No, it's a serious question. Judging by your laughter, I guess nobody has attained jhana. Dear Venerable Monks, do you enjoy your life as a monk? Is Bodhi a good place for training? Does Ajahn give you hard times sometimes? Sadhu Bhante, I think we answered this question. Under Ajahn Brahm's teaching, do you take up one, what is it, duty of study, or two, duty of contemplation, or both? Question to all monks and nuns. I guess each for their own. I'm not a monk who studies that much. I'm more of a monk who practices. So yeah, it's basically up to you. What you do as a monk, but Ajahn Brahm encourages the monks to do both, because he says if you study the suttas and Vinaya, then you become an authority of Buddhism, and that will be good for your future. So, but I'm not up to that practice yet because it's so difficult for me. So, duty of contemplation. So, yeah, that's a meditation practice. So, yeah, that's what I like to do, meditation practice.
I not really study because I'm pretty too old to learn a new language like Pali. I have to my difficulties with the English language, so Pali is I'm not so much interested in learning Pali, but I think it's very useful to have a good translator from the suttas if you listen to the sutta talks given by Ajahn Brahm or Ajahn Brahmali, who can explain us what is written in the suttas. And for my own, I studied law. And if you read only the books, the text, the law text, the only text, you can read it. Maybe it's interesting for you, but do you understand? I have to study to understand what's written there. And with Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Brahmali, we have two excellent teachers to explain for us what is written in the suttas and what we want to tell us. And he can translate in our time and in our language and in a language with pictures, we can understand what's the meaning of the suttas. So for me, it's very helpful to listen to the talks about the suttas, what's written in the suttas. And it's, for me, important to know what is really said by the Buddha. Because what's only one was interesting for me, because I'm not so much interesting about the commentaries, what's much later. It's not the word of the Buddha. The word of the Buddha is interesting for me. And we both can explain what it is, and that's interesting, and that I listen to. Yes, of course, and for me, it's also helpful to contemplate sometimes what's happened. So maybe before I start meditation, it's not only for me present moment awareness. Sometimes it's also very helpful to contemplate. I have to die. That's for sure. Ajahn Brahm said it's also a very nice mantra to use sometimes. Especially, I don't like so much walking meditation, but for walking meditation, it's nice to walk. I have to die, that's for sure. And to contemplate before you start to meditate, and or to contemplate, okay, there is nobody who wants to control. So then we try to control that the whole time, and of course I do too, also in my meditation. And sometimes contemplating is helpful for me. So I do also both, but not only because it's supposed, but it's, for me it's helpful to do both things, but not really study, because there are two good teachers, we have studied, and I believe in them.
Under Ajahn Brahm's teaching, do you take up duty of study or duty of contemplation, or both. So, I'm visiting under Ajahn Brahm's teaching. But I can just say that meditation to me is very important. And study also is a very important source of inspiration for me personally. So I like reading the words of the Buddha, and so I found it very inspiring and important to know what was being taught. And also the learning of the Vinaya, the monastic kind of disciplinary code. And so I know what I'm practicing and to study them. So that's a very practical reason. So yes, I find both important. It's just a matter of finding a balance and finding the right thing to do for the right time. So certain time is better to just focus on meditation than vice versa. So.
For me, in the afternoon, after dana, usually I try to spend the whole time either practicing meditation or reading the suttas. There's so much to read. So, of course, the most important thing for me is to continue with the meditation practice. But then also I have to know about the Dhamma. So every day I will also read something from the Nikayas. And they are very helpful to meditation. And some things when you read, say about the dependent origination and whatnot, so you have to contemplate a little bit on them. Slowly the understanding will come. Okay?
Dear Venerable San Tuti, Venerable Sasana Dajja, what makes you both smile all the time? Have you ever suspected that Ajahn Brahm has a psychic power? Why? Thank you for being an inspiration to us. I don't suspect Ajahn Brahm to have any psychic powers. I think one monk said once that if Ajahn Brahm could read my mind, what he would read would be so disgusting that he would kick me out of the monastery. But as it was said a couple of days ago about the psychic power of teaching people, I suppose, and you may all agree with me that Ajahn Brahm does have a skill, maybe even a psychic power, to teach people Dhamma practice. So yeah, you could say that he does have a psychic power. But like levitating and, you know, reading people's minds and walking through walls and stuff like that, I haven't seen him do that. So, what's the first one? What makes you both smile all the time? Because Ajahn Brahm is so funny. You can't stop laughing at his jokes.
Okay, Ajahn Brahm is really one reason. So imagine you have a comedy channel every whole day. No, I don't know. It's a habit to
not to be worried about much things. If you can take a look what's happened, you can smile. Life is a joke. Nothing real. We're living a dream. We are not real. There's no you. Do you see me? Wrong view. I'm not here. So how I can take life serious? It's not. I didn't do so much in lay life. In lay life, some people have really problems with me because I didn't take them so serious. My bosses really. And I think in my office times, they were very worried about me because I was fun. And they were so serious to pay their debts and to pay their houses and for their children. Their problems, not my problems. So it's one thing, it's really a habit to take life not so serious. And maybe another reason is how to look at things. So what Ajahn Brahm said, you can take a look at things, you see all the ugly things. And it's everywhere. So, but to try to take a look what makes you happy. Sometimes when the people come in the monastery and we go down for our Pindapat, I'm very happy every moment when I walk down the steps, or sometimes when I'm late, because all the people come to feed me. I have, let's say, holidays. I don't have to pay for my holidays. You come to feed me every day. And you all give me the opportunity to purify my mind, to keep my precepts, to stay in a monastery. So, and when I come down and say all the people in this line, how can I be not happy? So it's a way that you make me smile. So I'm happy that you stay here and you support me. You make me happy. So, and that's the way to look at things. Not to take a look, oh, he's at the end of the line, maybe he is too slow. No. Oh, this monk is talking too long with this. I'm too late. Let's walk. No, take a look and at the things and take a look. People can really make you happy if you look in the right way. And yeah, that's it to take. And it takes not so serious. It's a joke. It's only life. And maybe if I will become a next and a next and a next. So take life so serious. And all the others. But the most of time, when I was younger, what makes me very, very worried was, what can they think about me? Oh, that's the main problem. You all think me all the time, oh, what he may think about me, what she may think about me. And when you realize, they all have the same problem. The neighbor behind you is thinking, oh, maybe what you should think about me. If I want to think about what you think about me, what I'm telling you. Doesn't matter, really. So, and if you stop to think about what others think about you, it's so a happy life because you don't have to be worried. You can do what you want. Do what you want and enjoy. Enjoy yourself. So, and if you can enjoy yourself, life is so easy and so happy. So, don't think about too much what others think about you. Enjoy yourself and your life as much as you can. Do you want to try?
Oh, only fast! Oh, okay. Oh, sorry.
Dear Ven. Dear Ven. What are three best things about being a monk nun? What are the three suffering? Oh, okay, suffering being a monk. So, what are the three sufferings being a monk and nun? Honest answers, please. Okay, we've answered the suffering part, but we haven't answered the what is best about being a monk or a nun. So, the reason why I'm happy being a nun is. I'll be honest with you. Happy as a monk. To me, this monastic life is about ending suffering, to practice the meditation, to study the Buddhist teachings, And these are the things that make me happy in monastic life. And one of the things that make me happy is the time that monastic life gives me to practice my meditation practice. So yeah, that's what makes me happy, to meditate, to have time to meditate, to develop peace and stillness within myself. And I know from experience, and I know for a fact that if you can develop a little bit of peace and a little bit of stillness, that is going to lead to a lot of happiness in your life, and wisdom as well, because it's the wisdom that makes you happy. It's the wisdom that teaches. Well, you learn the wisdom yourself, so you learn how to let go and live life in a way where you don't create too many problems for yourself or for other people. So, yeah, that's why I'm happy being a monk, because it is an easy life as well, you know. You don't have to cook your food no more. You get a roof over your head. You don't have to teach because Ajahn does all the teachings. You can sleep as much as you want. Monastic life is good. It does keep me happy. So yeah, if any of you want to try out, then I recommend you come and stay in our monastery, or even if you want to become a nun, you can stay in Dhammasara. You never know what may happen, you know, so just give it a shot.
When you come back in your ordinary life, when you all go home, maybe you don't realize it now, but you will realize when you come home, how is your state of mind? Like Ajahn Brahm said, if you are relaxed, how do you react to others? We can shout at you, you can do bad things to you. You are really relaxed, and you have a smile on your face and say, yes, I understand, it's okay. So, and if you don't continue your practice, how long does it take that the old habits come back? When I did my first retreat, my life changed completely. After 10 days retreat, not Ajahn Brahm, but another one, my life changed completely. But I didn't practice. Okay, I did 2 months practice again. Then I stopped. Okay, it was excuses, too late, too busy, too this. And I realized the old habits come back, all the old habits. And you become angry again, and it's going faster and faster. And in monastic life, you have so much time to meditate. To purify your mind, and when you realize how good meditation is for you and what it does for you, this 9 days, you will realize when you come at home, maybe not here, but you will see, take a look at yourself, how long you can keep this happiness in your mind and this stillness. And when you understand why it's so an easy life and a happy life in a monastic, when I think back at home, how often I argue with other people. The neighbor, I am too loud, I am too late, with my relation, with all the things. But when we have less argue, okay, I cannot remember. I cannot remember when I was last time angry about anybody since I stay in the monastery. There was no reason for me. Okay. No, not really. So it's nice, and I enjoy very much not more to be so angry. I was such an angry person sometimes because I was so busy. My mind was so fast running. And I remember when I was in the office, the last time in my office, I was running to the printer to take out the sides and to run back in my office and to ring at the phone. I was only running. No time for peace. So, and of course, I was very angry sometimes and very unfair to other people. So, and when you realize that's not good for you, you are not really so really happy like you should be, like you can be. And when you remember, oh yeah, there was a retreat, you did meditate. That's it. And this you all can have in monastic life. It leads really to more happiness and to more stillness. And okay, I miss my bath. So I don't miss TV, but sometimes suffering. No, not really suffering. But I like to take a nice bath, to lay down 1 or 2 hours in warm water, and that warm water again and again. And of course, I like to eat in the afternoon, so I can't do these things, but not so bad. There are some more good things than bad things. That's what you say. Come try out. Why do you stay in there? I said, every time to a friend in the monastery, another monastery, I can't understand the people. They go every day in the office. And nobody, come through. Nobody goes, like to go in the office. Nobody, and or like to go at work. Why you do? Why? It's so easy to stay in a monastery, have holidays. You can meditate the whole time if you want. Do we have free accommodations? Okay, he knows.
Well, when I'm doing something that is exactly what my heart wants to do, so that's a very happy place to be. And it's the, I remember before I ordained, that was one of my biggest struggle was basically, when I hear the teaching of the Buddha, I just want to follow 100%. But I was kind of still in the middle of something. And I was just kind of like, I want to do this, but I'm here. So it was just kind of, I want to do something. My body is not there. And now it's kind of, you can have other things happening that may be happy, not happy, whatever. But at the end of it is I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And it's a path that the Buddha taught and practiced himself. It's not something he taught and then, you know, you do it, that kind of thing. He practiced himself. And, you know, I just want to try. And in the monastery, you get to hear, you get to be with people who have the same, faith in the Dhamma. And you can hear the Dhamma all the time. So, and that's very precious. That's really, really, really beautiful. So on the flip side is, lay life sucks. Isn't that obvious? You know, I can be in the forest and meditate. I go to Perth, is probably better than Sydney, or even Hong Kong. It's just so busy. Everyone rushing around wanting something. Everyone going around wanting something. I remember going down the street when I was still in Hong Kong at that time. You know, I was already kind of like very, kind of can jump off to ordain any time, that kind of state. And I looked around the street. It was so fast, and everyone wants something. They're going shopping, they're eating, they're rushing, they're running for a bus, they're driving a car, constantly talking. It's just kind of like, like in Chinese, we have a saying that they're all rushing to die. So that kind of life doesn't inspire me, and I don't want to be in it. So that's 3 reasons. I stop.
I am very happy to have ordained. That's one reason. The next reason is, although I'm old in age, but I'm very young in my monastic life. I'm only 1 year old. So I am very happy to grow as a nun. And thirdly, in spite of my age, I'm so happy I have the opportunity to ordain, and and I keep on growing, rather than if I have been at home, staying at home, I would be more or less doing the same old things every day. And if I'm around, the children are, it's a bonus for them, because if I'm around, I will always take care of the food. But here in the monastery, I feel I'm growing, have the opportunity to keep on growing. And hopefully, I can continue to grow in my next life as a monastic. I can't see the negative side of this life. Maybe at the beginning, I wasn't used to it. But now that I've gone used to it, I can't see the negative side.
It is getting a bit late. It's 9:10. Do you want the monks and nuns to continue? Continue on? We've got the whole water question. That's a lot. Tonight we're going to have an all-night sit. So no sleeping tonight. Okay, for monks and nuns, how is the seniority based on age, years of service, jhana? So I suppose I can just answer this question. Seniority is based on when the monk or nun has gotten ordained. So, and how it works is the older you are as a monk in monk years, the higher up the seating arrangement you sit. So what you've witnessed here is that Ajahn sits here on this seat, and then the monks junior to him sit after him. And that goes the same in Dhammasara Monastery. So, that's it. So, and when does a monk and nun have their birthday? Can anybody answer that question? When does it? No. When does a monk or nun have their birthday? Yes, when do they... Yes, it's how many reigns you have. That's when you have your monk's or nun's birthday. So when does that happen? For a monk? For a nun? The beginning of the reigns retreat. So once the reigns retreat starts, the monk or nun gets 1 year older.
Really?
Okay, this is for you, Sasana Dajja. What encouraged you to become a monk? Where did you ordain? How did you find your way to Bodhinyana Monastery? Why did you choose to come here? So, you know, since we have a lot of questions, maybe we can keep these answers.
Sure. Forgive me, please. I'm old.
What? Like she said. Lay life sucks. Really, really. If you see all the problems in this lay life, and you start to see that you go in a direction. If you ask yourself, what do you want from your life? Is it where you stay now and where you go now? Is it really the way you want to go? And when you take a look, to your parents. And when you are young, you think, I will never be like my father. I will never do the same things like my mother. When you become a little bit older, you realize, oh, that's what my father said. Oh, that's my mother. And you realize, you go absolutely in the same direction. So that's one way. And yes, I did realize when I go on in this life, I have no more so much time in this life, because I'm going to die very fast. If I continue with life, I wouldn't live this life very long, because I was so running, so busy, and that's not good for my health. So that was the reason to search a solution. And da-da-da-da, there's a solution, monastic life. You'll find a place to relax.
the most important thing that it's underestimated. I talked today with Tom. We don't underestimate the reality to relax. To relax. Calm down. That's the first thing in the monastery. I don't start directly to meditate. I go to look at the sunset. I walk around the monastery. So there's all the way to be happy. It's first relax. Because I can do in the monastery. I have time to relax. You can only relax if you have holidays. I can do every day. Where did you ordain? My ordination was in Paok Monastery in Burma. It's there are only two monasteries where the choice for me it was Bodhinyana, and the other was Paok Monastery, because there I had to have my first meditation experiences, and it's also very well monastery. Why did you choose to come here? I chose to come here because I listened to teaching of Ajahn Brahm at first time in Paok. And this time I developed some problems with meditation, and after I read his books I understood my problems very well, because he knows the Western mind much better than the others. The Western mind is, in my opinion, others conditioned than the Asian mind sometimes. So that's also teaching. The second was the climate. It's more easy to deal with the climate here in Australia. And the next one was, maybe you can develop more health problems when you stay in Asia. When I came to here, my health problems followed me, so I'd have an allergic reaction, but I was running from Paok. I was going to avoid diseases, and I got them here. So you cannot take your problems away. Yeah, that's it. I am German.
Oh, I should read it out. I'm reading loud. I wish to become a nun, but my parents do not agree with me. What should I do in order to make them have confidence? To become a nun is not meant to abandon their parents. Please advise. Thanks. Sadhu. Yeah, I think I run into that kind of thing too. I think what I did, I just have an honest chat with them and tell them why I wrote them a four pages of A4 paper of why I want to ordain and what it means to me to become a Buddhist nun. And of course that was too difficult to understand on paper, so we have another 5 hours of meeting with my parents, so that's very adventurous. I just try to be honest. Yeah. Just tell them, what I think and how I feel.